This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. I'm Phil Davin, coming up on this program. As the COVID-19 pandemic ravages India, we look at just how it's affecting India's Jewish community. We also hear from Chief Rabbi Ephraim Mervis, who tells us why he is supporting the UNICEF vaccine rollout program in a bid to try and help some of the poorer countries in the world. We also hear from author Esther Marshall, who has written a fascinating book in honor of her late sister, highlighting the importance of mental health to the younger members of the community and hopefully beyond. But before all of that, it's time for a look at your copy of the Jewish News. And joining me to go through it this week, we have news editor Justin Cohen and political editor Lee Harpin. Welcome to you both.
Hello, Phil.
Right, so let's have a look first and foremost at the front page. And headline reads, "Help give the rest of the world a shot." I'm assuming this is something to do with the vaccination.
It is. I think it's we've led today on the vaccination campaign that's been launched by UNICEF. They're looking to deliver billions of extra vaccines around the world to countries that can't afford them, to places where the rollout is particularly slow at the moment. In Britain, it's quite hard to comprehend what's going on in the majority of the world. We've got vast supplies of vaccines. It looks like within a matter of weeks, we could be fully out of the pandemic if all goes to plan, in the same way as Israel is. But the truth is that in the vast majority of the world, they're not seeing this light yet, not at all. They know the vaccines exist, and in some ways, I imagine that makes it all the more frustrating that they're not receiving them. So we're throwing our full weight behind this campaign by UNICEF, as is the chief rabbi, the likes of Rachel Riley and others, to deliver these vaccines. And we also decided that we're going to give over our donation platform on our website, where usually we solicit donations for our own journalism to this campaign over the next 2 weeks. It's the first time we've ever done that. But as I said, it's hard to imagine a more urgent and pressing campaign affecting so many people.
Well, I was thinking about this, and I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. The first thought that crossed my mind when I heard the news about the campaign that's obviously, this is beyond the Jewish news. This is a campaign, as you say, by UNICEF. And I thought to myself, well, hang on a second. But Britain has now, shadow of a doubt, already spent so much money trying to sort ourselves out and get us out of this. Now, if you look beyond the humanitarian point behind this, and like me, your first thought is, wait, how much is this going to cost? I think we need to think of the bigger picture here. If we don't do this, if we don't take advantage of the fact that we do have a great stock of vaccinations and help some of the rest of the world, the UK is an international hub in ordinary times. And when people come in and out of this country all the time, can you just imagine what is going to happen when we start relaxing things, where other countries do start coming back here, something slips, the virus gets out of control again? It's actually in our best interest to do this.
Yeah, I would also say that apart from that absolute reality, in terms of the Jewish community support for this campaign, we've seen this week not only figurehead in the chief rabbi backing the campaign, but also a separate campaign launched by BJA, the British Indian Jewish Association, alongside the Asian Jewish Business Network, which I helped set up, I should mention, to support the campaign to deliver oxygen to India specifically. The scenes that we're seeing on the news at the moment are particularly horrific. And I think it's worth noting because often the community is painted or that it's perceived to be very insular looking about helping our own. But these two key campaigns, which are really dominant in the Jewish press today, both looking outside, both helping other people.
Page 2 of the Jewish News for this week. The headline reads, Labour suspends at 14 and Tories act in, quote, problem city. Lee, what on earth is going on in the run-up to local elections?
I thought this was a particularly significant story because it seems to, well, it's apparent that it affects more than one political party. So it isn't a party political thing. It's a problem with anti-Semitism that has emerged in both the Conservative and Labour parties in the city of Peterborough. So basically, over the past week, I think the Conservative Party were presented with evidence that some of their councillors had been circulating tweets and speeches that clearly crossed the borders into problematic material. At the same time, Labour seemed to have proactively had a look at their own activists in the city and have discovered quite a major problem there and decided to act by suspending no less than 14 people, including 7 councillors. Now, I must stress that suspensions are ahead of investigations, and investigations could well find that some of these posts were wrongly sent and some of these people are not guilty of what is alleged. But what I think it does show is that there's a really big scale problem across political parties with anti-Semitism in this city. Now, the Jewish Leadership Council have made a very timely intervention, I think, over what's been going on in Peterborough. They issued a statement referencing what they saw as the specific problem in the city. The local Conservative MP, Paul Bristow, last night responded by issuing his own statement, inviting the JLC to come and address him, speak with him, and they want to proactively try and go about tackling the problem, which I think is a very positive step and shows the importance of organisations like the board, the JLC, the London Jewish Forum, how important these organisations can be for us as a community.
Well, one would like to think that given everything that happened in recent years with Labour and anti-Semitism, that all parties, as soon as there is so much as a whiff of anything like this, will act accordingly. And it certainly would appear at surface value that the main parties involved in this are behaving in the way they should do, and hopefully they'll continue to do so. Let's have a look at page 14. And Lee, you've been speaking to Conservative mayoral candidate Sean Bailey.
Yes, well, next Thursday, we all go to the polls, or those of us who want to vote and cast our votes, for the London mayor, as well as London Assembly candidates. I spent last Thursday with Sean Bailey, the Conservative candidate. We walked the mean streets of Hendon. And previous week, it must be said, I'd spent the Thursday with Sadiq Khan, the Labour candidate, where we'd walked the streets of Golders Green. What I was actually surprised with was the good response both candidates received. Mayor Sadiq very warmly received in pitta bars, etc., in Golders Green. And as we wandered around some of the more famous kosher stores on Brent Street and in Hendon, again, people came out to greet Sean Bailey and were very positive about his campaign in the same way they were positive about Sadiq's campaign. So I think we've heard a lot of negativity about this election, with people claiming to be disinterested, suggesting that they won't vote. But from what I saw, there's real engagement with both candidates, and especially amongst people from our own community.
And of course, it is important to stress that there are numerous candidates standing for the position of London mayor for 2021, which of course should have been last year, but slightly delayed due to the pandemic. And for that full list of candidates, you can go to londonelects.org.uk. Let's turn back a couple of pages now to page 4, to be precise. And on page 4, this without a shadow of a doubt stood out to me as one of the most disturbing things I'd seen this week. Headline reads, anti-vaxxer, yellow stars, a sign of moral decline. Really? For those who don't know, Justin, what on earth is this about?
Yeah, I mean, this certainly was one of the images of the week for the community. And we put it on our front page as well under the headline, there's no vaccine for stupidity. I think, you know, stupidity is possibly a generous way of putting it. To have people walking through the streets of London protesting lockdown, protesting vaccinations, and to use this symbol that they know full well the significance it has for Jewish people, and indeed, you know, it's a worldwide significance, is beyond stupid. It's ignorant, it's disgusting, frankly, and the outpouring of, you know, shock and disappointment we saw on social media was indicative of that. I don't know how widely these stars were being used, but certainly we saw a few different people being pictured with them. and seemingly kind of completely unaware of what they were doing. But to say that there's any comparison, as they were trying to draw, between the Shoah and what they perceive as a loss of freedom now is beyond belief.
Well, I might put it out there that there is no defense for this, because it's very simple. Either you know what this symbol is, you must know what this symbol is, because why else would you try and make that link and say that the vaccination program is somehow stupidly comparable to the Shoah? Then that's why they're wearing that star. They had to know what that symbol meant. But what if they did know that and they still went ahead with it? Well, then it is equally stupid that they actually thought it was a good idea. Unbelievable. That full story is on page 4. I'm afraid that's all we've got time for a look at the paper. But do not forget, if you are at home for whatever reason and you are isolating and you are unable to go out, you will be able to find the full paper as it would be printed online at jewishnews.co.uk. News editor Justin Cohen and political editor Lee Harpin, thank you both very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thanks, Phil.
This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. Now, we've all seen the horrific scenes to come out of India this week as the country continues to battle with the COVID-19 pandemic. Foreign editor Mike Daventry has been looking into how this has been affecting the Jewish community in Mumbai. Ralph Vijirad is a member of the Mumbai Jewish community.
So in proportion, the Jewish community that resides in Mumbai is only close to 4,000 people. And they are fortunately situated in the areas of Mumbai, and particularly some of them are in the suburbs of Thane. And that also is a little bit more crowded, but it's not as crowded as the southern Bombay. There are no prayers being held inside the synagogue, so we keep those activities much more in lockdown condition as per the guidelines of the government and the authorities. So there are people who, when they go to the market and they sometimes have some kind of infection or they come in contact with somebody who is maybe asymptomatic or with the situation, and then they deserve to get medical help. And we have had cases which went to the hospital and many of them returned back because of good medical care, but there were some deaths and we really feel loss of those people, 15 of them roughly, who died since the COVID started until last Friday, which was the last death.
Ralphie Gerard, a member of the Mumbai Jewish community there, and Michael Daventry joins me now. Mike, just listening to what Ralphie is describing there, I mean, it does really make us, I think, sit up and realise just how lucky we are in this country that we have got a grip in the way we have.
It really does help to put it in context, really. I mean, the numbers that Ralphie were talking about are, I mean, I can't believe we're talking about relative numbers here, but he was talking about 15 members of the Jewish community, the most recently on Friday, of a community that's about 4,000 people have died. But that's 15 deaths in a city of 22 million. Mumbai is one of the most tightly packed, dense cities in the world, and this virus has been tearing its way through the city, much as it has been through much of India in this extremely destructive second wave. So I think what Ralphie's account was to give just a little illustration of how we are so lucky here in the UK now, having been through a very difficult winter, I'm sure you'll agree, that in other parts of the world, things are really not going very well.
And of course, part and parcel of the reason why we are so lucky is because of the frankly superb vaccination program that we have, second only really to Israel and also, I believe, the United Arab Emirates. And they are really, I think, the only other two countries that are ahead of us. But when it comes to the vaccination, as we heard earlier in the paper review, there's a massive UNICEF campaign in a bid to try and get that vaccination rolled out as far and as wide as possible. And I believe that you've been speaking to one of the key backers of it, the chief rabbi.
Yes, the chief rabbi Ephraim Mervis spoke to me a couple of days ago. There are quite a few Jewish figures, personalities, shall we say, who are endorsing this campaign that's being spearheaded or driven by UNICEF. But it's a crowdfunder campaign. They're trying to raise funds because, like you said, we are very fortunate in the UK as being one of the most vaccine effective countries so far in terms of deployment, and younger people increasingly are now getting the vaccine. And Europe is rolling out, although it's a little bit slower over there. So rich countries are on track, but poorer, lower income countries are not. And so what the chief rabbi was doing, in common with the Archbishop of Canterbury, several Muslim leaders, and Rachel Riley, who we also spoke to a little earlier on, that they're all saying that there is this campaign that we really need to see if we can put some more funds into to try and increase the vaccine drive for the lower income sections of the world. Because if not everyone in the world is vaccinated, then we haven't beaten COVID-19. So I started by asking the chief rabbi why the VaccinAid campaign in particular was important to him.
It's important to me, and I believe that it should be important to our entire UK Jewish community, and I'll tell you why. You know, so often we quote that marvelous saying of our sages from the Talmud, if one life, it's as if you've saved the whole world. We have an opportunity to achieve that. Every single one of us now has that opportunity. And another favorite saying from the Ethics of the Fathers is, the world stands upon three things, and one of those three things is gemilut chasadim, acts of loving kindness. And our world today genuinely stands upon the pillar of loving kindness, because as far as the pandemic is concerned, unless every single person is not vulnerable, then every person continues to be vulnerable. It's in all of our interests to remove this virus. But in the first instance, we have, through VaccinAid, a genuine opportunity to reach out to save lives. And this very much reflects the finest of Jewish values.
So you're clearly a proponent of ensuring that everyone vaccinates, Jewish or not. I wonder if you could say anything about the example that Israel has made through the vaccination program. As you know, Israel is one of the most successful, or at least the fastest vaccinators of its population in the world. What does that say for the Jewish population in the UK and for non-Jews around the world about the take-up of the vaccine and how effective it is?
You're right about the imperative for us to be vaccinated. I'm on the record having said on many occasions, I believe it is a mitzvah, unless, according to medical opinion, it is dangerous for a particular person. But the general rule by far is it's a mitzvah. It's an imperative for us to take the vaccination to protect and look after ourselves, and in that way as well to protect and look after all those around us. I am exceptionally proud of Israel's record in this regard, leading the world in rolling out vaccinations. I'm also very proud of what we have been doing here in Britain. And I think we're exceptionally fortunate as British citizens to be able to benefit from the gift of the miracle of the vaccine. I purposefully say the word miracle because, you know, usually when it comes to vaccinations, it takes many years, never less than 10 or so years, all the trials, all the tests, to determine that it can be successfully rolled out. And I think from the beginning of the pandemic until vaccinations were available, it only took about 10 months. And we need to appreciate how fortunate we are to have received this gift. And we in the UK are receiving our vaccinations free of charge, whereas there are millions, if not a few billion people around the world who are just not going to get it soon unless we help them to receive it. And that is what VaccinAid is all about.
And briefly then, can you tell us how people who are interested in contributing to VaccinAid, what should they do? Where should they go? And how could they contribute?
VaccinAid.org, as simple as that. You know, this is a call that I'm issuing together with Archbishop of Canterbury and other leaders. It is being rolled out with the full and enthusiastic support of the NHS. UNICEF UK, together with Crowdfunder, have launched the VaccinAid project. we are utilizing the wonderful services of the COVAX campaign in order for vaccinations, thanks to our generosity, to reach 190 countries. It's a staggering number within which there are people who otherwise will not be vaccinated soon. And it's as simple as that. You know, I believe that as an act of thanksgiving, further to us receiving the vaccinations, it's a small thing that we can all do. It's so easy. And when else do we have such an opportunity to reflect the finest of Jewish values and to save lives in this way?
Chief Rabbi Ephraim Mervis speaking to Jewish News' foreign editor, Michael Daventry. This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. Now, a campaign to donate a children's mental health book to all UK Jewish primary schools in the country launches this week. Sophie Says It's Okay Not to Be Okay, by our next guest, author Esther Marshall, aims to provide youngsters and their families with the vocabulary to talk about their emotions. I'm delighted to say Esther joins me now on the Jewish News Podcast. Esther, thank you very much indeed for taking the time to talk about a subject that I feel that many don't ordinarily take the time to talk about. And I can't help but think how different the world would be if we did. So thank you for that alone. Tell us a little bit about the origins of this book.
Of course, thank you so much for having me. Well, the origins of this book starts from a very tragic story where my younger sister, Rebecca, a phenomenal, phenomenal woman, suffered for around 6 years with different mental illnesses, backwards and forwards, different diagnoses, in and out of hospital. We thought she was getting a little bit better. It was a really traumatic 6 years for all involved. And in January last year, she decided that she could no longer carry on and kind of ended her battle with her mental health and mental illness journey. So I'd already written a previous book to this, which was mine and my sister's idea to do together, about kind of leading females and not being able to see them in books. And Rebecca was a phenomenal artist and she was going to do the illustrations and I was going to be doing the writing. Only she, soon after the idea, went into hospital, but she said to me, please carry on with it. I'd love to see what happens. So while she was in hospital, I was showing her each of the different illustrations. And the second book, It's Okay Not to Be Okay, I wrote in the 2 days after she passed away as a book in honor of her legacy. And I have now quit my corporate role and I am working day in, day out, speaking to children, reading to children this book and speaking to them about why their mental health is so important.
Now, what I particularly like about them, may I say at this stage, obviously, on behalf of everyone at Jewish News Podcast, naturally very, very sorry to hear about what you and your family have been through and obviously wish you long life. But what I like about this book straight away, bearing in mind I have not read it, is that the title tells you almost everything you need to know. Based on the other work that I do, which for those who don't know is I work in radio that focuses on mental health and well-being. And I work very closely with friends of mine who are really active in this particular field as well. I just like the way that the title says the message within. Now, ordinarily, you wouldn't give that away in a book because obviously you wouldn't want to give away the purpose behind it. You want people to read it. But as much as you probably want people to still read it, I'm liking the way that this actually sort of does say what we need to know. And I do find it bizarre how for so many years the sort of the status quo has been, well, it's okay not to be okay, but just as long as you don't tell anyone about it.
Yeah, exactly. This is, it's okay not to be okay, please shout it from the rooftops and tell everyone you possibly can, is really the message I'm trying to get across from here. And yes, it's to children, but it's also to adults, it's to anybody.
And what I particularly find fascinating as well is it seems to be that within our community, somehow exacerbated by the fact that we apply unnecessary pressure to ourselves, to our community, to say that we're going to, by a certain age, get married. We're, by a certain age, we're going to have a family. We are, by a certain age, going to do this, do that, and do the other. But at no stage Has anyone ever actually explored the emotions behind that pressure that we put on ourselves and say, do you know what, why do we do this to ourselves? And it starts from such a young age. We actually do this to our children, and that is really not okay. So I'm loving the fact that you just are brazenly going against the tide, and bravo to you.
Yep, I'm happy to do that. I've been doing that majority of my life, talking about things that aren't necessarily what I guess some people would think a young, nice Jewish girl would talk about. I started up a charity all about abuse. My work that I did at work was all about diversity, inclusion, making sure all people felt included. I was global lead for a massive company called Unilever in diversity and inclusion. So it's just been something I've always wanted to kind of put out there. If other people aren't going to talk about it, I will. And especially now becoming a mother and seeing that even my two-year-old understands this kind of stuff, it's just a no-brainer for me that this needs to be part of the conversation.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about some of the language that features within the book, because I said in my introduction there, this is very much about the vocabulary that you use to help children understand what's they're feeling, and more importantly, probably to help those around them know what to look out for and how to deal with it. So where does that vocabulary come from? What was the purpose behind your choice of wording in the book?
A lot of it was from conversations I had with my sister while she was in hospital, while she was going through either deep depression or psychosis. And it was very much, what is it that you wish you would have known when you were a child, or you wish children nowadays would know? And I've taken those messages and made them into a rhyme that come across as still very simple but effective kind of messaging. I can read you a few of the inserts if that would be.
I would love it. I would love it if you do that, please.
It's okay to be sad and okay to feel down. Just make sure you have good friends around. There may be days when you feel you're alone, but around us, you'll always be at home. And then they ask their friend Jamie, because he's the one that's feeling sad. And I did that on purpose. So it's a boy. So we start to address the whole toxic masculinity, especially within our young Jewish boys. I don't really know how to describe how I feel, as I can't work out what's in my head and what's real. A smile may be what you see, but that's not how I feel inside me. There are times I feel quite alone because these feelings are unknown. Some days I'm happy and some days I'm sad, and other days I feel so bad.
You know, what's particularly poignant about what you say there about trying to break down the masculinity barrier is that this week, how poignant it is that it marks the third anniversary since a chap by the name of Ollie Lee, who's a 16-year-old who took his life. And that's very much what I know his family's trust they've set up in his name, the Ollie Lee Trust, do as well, all about trying to sort of fund those who are trying to get the message across early on to say, look, this has got to change. Something's got to give. We cannot carry on like this forever, because frankly, I don't understand sort of how we've let it get this bad before a margin of people. This is the problem. There's only a few people really in the grand scheme of things are talking about this. Why don't we have as a standard rule, you've got a first aider without thinking. We've got first aiders across the board in all schools. You wouldn't dream of having a member of staff that wasn't a first aider. Without a doubt, have someone who's a mental first aider as well. Have someone who knows what to look out for. What would you say, by the way, just finally, to parents? Okay, this is where I think that this is also going to be really helpful to them. What is it that you think they should be looking out for? Or what would you advise them off the back of this book? Because obviously it's about the family. It's not just about the child and knowing what to say. So what advice would you give to the parents as well?
I'd say to a lot of parents, because I speak to a lot of parents, and so many of them say, I'm so scared to bring it up because I'm going to make the situation worse. And we actually commissioned some research that found that over 80% of parents in the UK are worried about their child's mental health, but only a third of parents have any form of resources at home to talk about it. And that's exactly what this book does. And with the activity book that comes with it, it is a script for parents. They don't need to say anything. They don't need to be scared. It says everything for them, and the conversation will come with that. Same in the activity book. It's not just a colouring book. At the bottom of every page, there's something for parents to say. And I think we need to have a dialogue, because it's not just kids. It's parents that are worried to bring it up. So all I'd say is, please don't be scared. bring it up, use these resources, and I'll be bringing out lots more as well, and I'll be signposting people to wherever you can find them. Please don't be scared to bring up the conversation.
And I should say at this point that, of course, you are running this campaign with the support of Ought UK, which is, of course, the Jewish education charity. Campaign is hoping to raise around £50,000 to distribute 7,000 copies of the book alongside related activity book. But I do have to stress, though, that for those who can't see this, I can see you on Zoom, and I think you've got a few more than just 7,000 copies of that book there. How many have you got behind you?
I've got 20,000 behind me.
Good grief. All right. Okay. Well, in that case, I think someone needs to start buying those books. Thank you very much indeed. Esther Marshall, you are a marvel without a shadow of a doubt. Thank you very much indeed for all you do. And thank you for speaking to us on the Jewish News Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
And I will say at this point that if you or anyone you know is struggling at the moment and not feeling okay, then please don't hesitate. Call or text the Samaritans. 116123. And that's it. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group. Through its partners, GPG is working to support the growth of Jewish community life in the UK and worldwide. To find out more, you can visit gpg.org. All that's left for me to do is to say thank you to our guests, to Ralphie Gerard, Chief Rabbi Ephraim Mervis, speaking, of course, to Mike Daventry, and Esther Marshall. Of course, we must also say thank you to our paper team. They were Justin Cohen and Lee Harpin. And we must also say thank you to Justin for producing this episode. Please do subscribe to the show in your podcast application. That way you'll hear any previous episode or be informed when new episodes become available. And don't forget that for more information on any of the stories that we've featured, you can always visit jewishnews.co.uk. And if you'd like to comment, well, then we'd love to hear from you. You can always email editorial@thejngroup.com. That's editorial@thejngroup.com. From me, Phil Dave, do join us next time here on the Jewish News Podcast. Goodbye.